Welcome to our May 2009 audio conference for pastors on doubling your group size with our guest, Josh Hunt. My name is Bobby Gilstrap, and I'm the host for today's conference and the director of missions for Huron and Southeastern Baptist Associations in Southeastern Michigan. Let me introduce you first to our guest for today's conference, and then we'll move right on into our Q&A time, asking those questions that must be answered. Josh is the new pastor of Salem Baptist Church in Salem, New Mexico. Josh is nationally known for his ability to lead churches to double their small group attendance. In addition to now being a pastor, Hunt has been a minister of education in addition to consulting nationwide. He also writes Sunday School Helps in a format that he calls Good Question Format, which he publishes on the Internet to correspond with two of Lifeway's curriculum outlines. Hunt is a graduate of Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary and Wayland University. He is a creative thinker and an energetic speaker whose passion is to see people come to know God and to enjoy God. He has spoken at some of the leading churches in America, has authored 7 books, and produced 7 video series as well, most related directly to helping your church be able to increase in size. Today, Josh joins the audio conference for pastors to discuss practical ways that we can double our group size so churches can grow and continue to reach people in their communities. Josh, we want to thank you for joining us, and welcome to our audio conference for pastors.
A pleasure to be here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we look forward to the insights you're going to be able to give us and the practical help that we're going to get as we move forward. Let me ask you to do this. Let's take just a minute as we begin and ask you just to kind of lay some groundwork for us. Can you give us a kind of a good idea of where we need to go? And then we'll jump into the questions right after that. But just kind of give us some foundation.
Well, my ministry is all about two ideas. One is about doubling groups. As you mentioned, I've been spending the last 11 years full-time doing conference speaking, and over the last few months I felt like probably I've been out of local church work too long because it's starting to look easy to me, and I know it's not. And sure enough, getting back in at the last few months, I'm starting to think, you know, I think this is possible, but it's probably a little more difficult. It's going to take a little more time than I thought. But anyway, the idea is all around doubling groups and doubling groups through hospitality, as we'll unpack in a moment.
Excellent. Well, let's jump right into our questions, because I know there's a whole lot of information that we could give to our participants today to try to help them. And I want you to have all the time possible to do that before we open the lines up for questioning at the very end. But let's start with our first question. That is really just, what is the potential of doubling groups in a church?
All right. Let me come at that two different ways. Actually answer two different questions. One is the possibility. For a class to double every 2 years or less means around 40% growth. Or it means an average-sized Sunday school class going from 10 to 14 in a year. When I teach my conferences, I'll normally get 10 volunteers to stand up and get in a little small group, and I'll get them to act like they're a Sunday school class for a moment. And I'll ask them, do you think it's within the realm of possibility that if you worked and prayed and contacted and visited and did a halfway decent job with the lesson and so on, do you think it's within the realm of possibility that you 10 people, and then I'll normally point to 4 people in the room, you think you could reach these 4 pagans? And of course, everyone will laugh a bit, and then I'll say, well, do you think you think, just if there's any holdouts here, do you think you could do it if I offered you $1 million? If I offered you 10 people $1 million the first Sunday you had 14 in attendance, how long do you think it would take you to get there? And for me, it'd take about 10 minutes. It wouldn't take me long at all. And my point in saying that is I have never met a Sunday school teacher anywhere that wouldn't tell me that if I were properly motivated, if I really tried, if I really set this as a life goal for me, I could grow a class by 40% a year. I could grow a class by 10 to 14 in a year. Now, so that's the possibility that it really can happen. One of the reasons I believe that so strongly is because I've been traveling for the last 11 years, speaking in churches all across North America, a few other places as well, but mostly through the South, and I have heard hundreds and hundreds of stories of Sunday school teachers who have actually doubled their classes every 2 years or less. Invariably, people will come up to me after conferences and say, hey, can I tell you my story? And in fact, in the last year or two, I bring my video camera with me. I've posted quite a number of those online. You could become my friend on Facebook. Look me up by my email address, josh@joshhunt.com. And take a look at some of the videos that I posted of Sunday school teachers and small group leaders who have said, you know, I doubled my class, and I think you can too. So anyway, that's the possibility of this. And then one of the reasons why I believe this is not happening routinely is it doesn't look like much. If you're in a class that grows from 10 to 14 in a year, and I were to ask you as a Sunday school teacher, how's your class doing? You'd probably say something like, well, it's rocking along. We're doing okay. You know, we're making some progress. But you wouldn't use language like, you know, all my life I've prayed that God would bring a mighty sweeping revival, and it's finally here. Because if you're growing a class from 10 to 14 in a year, most teachers not even keeping up with numbers all that much, truthfully. They're keeping up with the lesson. They're students. They're bookish kind of people, and they're not much into math. And they don't even know if their class is growing or not. And so it doesn't look like much. But the potential of doubling classes is this. If we were to speed up the clock just slightly and double a class, we've been talking about every 2 years or less, if we could get it to every 18 months, we could start a new class, a group of 10 that doubles every 18 months can reach 1,000 people for God in 10 years. Stated a different way, a group of 10 that doubles every 18 months would reach the entire world population in the past 40 years. The potential for doubling groups is absolutely astounding and incredible. Two of my best illustrations of that are, a couple of videos you can see if you become my friend on Facebook. That one is John Sprinkle, is the Minister of Education at Indian Trail Baptist in the Charlotte area. And I've been in his church a couple of times, and the last time I was there, he told me about a little presentation he did at his church. And once again, this is a video that's available online. And he talked about he used to be a youth minister, and when he started as a minister of education, he realized that as a youth minister, he didn't get a lot of respect. And if he was going to get any respect, he needed to actually teach an adult Sunday school class. So he and his wife and one or two other couples started an adult class, and he says, you know, back in the early days, it didn't look like much. It wasn't that exciting. There was, you know, he and his wife, one other couple, and sometimes their parents, I think he says it, when they show up. But they did the things that contribute to growth. The next thing you know, they fill the room and they divided the class. And then in this presentation, he's telling this story from the pulpit. So he says, everybody in that original class come forward, and, you know, six or eight people come forward. And then, you know, we divided that class, and everybody who was in that class come forward. And then we divided that class, and everybody who was in those two classes come forward. And next thing you know, the whole stage is full of about 50 people. And this is in 4 or 5 years. And as he points out in the video, this is just the Sunday night crowd. I showed this video down in Sarasota, Florida, and had another man was inspired by it, and he said, you know what, I could do that. And he did a similar presentation in his church, which is also viewable on Facebook, and you can see the incredible potential where in about 5 years, you start with 5 or 10 people, and you're filling the stage with 50 people. The simple fact of math is this. A group of 10 that doubles every 18 months, if you want to know where it will be in 5 years, you just add a zero every 5 years. So 10 in 5 years will be 100, and another 5 years it'll be 1,000. That is the incredible potential of doubling groups.
Now, Josh, if we're going to be able to do that, I know that many churches, the educational system, whether it be small groups, whether it be Sunday school, others, oftentimes we fall into a kind of a laissez-faire kind of an attitude, kind of a level of mediocrity. And the idea of really working hard, it seems like a whole lot of effort to continue to grow. But ultimately, you and I both grasp this because we're ministers. We understand that our passion needs to be reaching people. That's got to be priority. So I want us to move to the second question because I think it really is critical. And it's a practical step, or practical steps of doubling. So help us to understand, what are the 5 steps to doubling groups? Make this simple for us so that we can communicate this to our leaders, our teachers, and help them to understand that they don't have to be satisfied with being the same all the time. They don't have to be, just a group of satisfied saints. They can really be reaching their world and making a difference through doubling these groups.
All right. I appreciate the opportunity. In the book, I talk about a 5-point outline, T-I-G-E-R, Tiger, T-I-G-E-R. Let me just go over all 5, and then we'll kind of talk about a few of them as we have time. T stands for teach a halfway decent lesson each and every week, nothing less will do. Teach a halfway decent lesson each and every week, nothing less will do. And the idea there is, I got a lot of pushback about that over the years. And people want to say, well, we don't need halfway decent teaching. We need incredible teaching. And all the better if we can get incredible teaching. My point in saying a halfway decent lesson is you don't got to be Chuck Swindoll to double a Sunday school class. And I've known a lot of people who have doubled Sunday school classes over the years, and their teaching was somewhat mediocre. In fact, my wife does training with me. She trains preschool and children workers. And she'll often ask, who is the best Sunday school teacher you have ever had as that you've ever sat under? And then we'll follow up that question by asking, how good a teacher were they? And oftentimes, they weren't all that good a teacher. The best Sunday school teachers we've ever had were not the best teachers. They were the one that loved us and so on. But the teaching itself, in my opinion, has to be what I call at least halfway decent each and every week. Nothing else less will do. And then the next 2 points are kind of the core of the outline that we want to get to, and that is inviting every member and every prospect to every fellowship every month. I teach a kind of party-driven strategy. It's modeled for us by Levi. If you're a pastor and wanted to preach on this, you might consider that text about Levi. Also goes by the name of Matthew, as you know, where the text says that after Levi held, after Levi became a follower of Christ, that Levi held a great banquet for Jesus, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with him. And you get the impression, at least, that many of them became followers of Christ because Levi got a party. And we've seen it happen more times than I can count. People will visit our church. I'm talking now about the back in the days when I was a minister of education. But people would visit our church, and then we would have them in our home, and we would play cards, and we'd have Diet Coke and coffee cake and table games, and maybe have them in our home another time. And next thing you know, they'd be joining the church. And if they were Baptists who moved to town from Alabama, so to speak, or as I like to say it, a little tongue-in-cheek, please don't take offense, but pagans who moved to town from California, whoever they were, if we could get them at our home and feed them our coffee cake, they would join our church. So we would systematically, first of all, and consistently invite every member and every prospect to every fellowship every month. This ensures that every member gets a contact once a month. I'm really getting in tune again with local church life, taking on this new pastorate. I might tell you just a little bit of context about this this church. Sunday school attendance the month before I came was 19 at Salem Baptist. In fact, I was real excited. Our second month, I guess you'd say first month of being there, the next business meeting, we had a Sunday school report, and Sunday school attendance was up to 21. And, of course, you know, I'm kind of a math guy a little bit, and I thought, well, we got 10% attendance increase in 1 month. This is wonderful. And then it hit me. That's just my wife and I. And so at any rate, I don't think Tiger Woods could hit a man-made structure from the front porch of this church. I mean, it is out in the country. If you'd like to Google it, go out on Google Maps and look for Salem, New Mexico, and we're about a mile out of town. And it's, the town itself is about 700, so it's very much a rural community. And, you know, when I got to talking to the people, they said, you know, we don't have any prospects. You know, we don't know anybody and so on. And I said, well, let's just go through the membership roll. And sure enough, they got a lot of people who were actually deceased and moved away and stuff. And anyways, we just kind of walked through that membership roll with a group of people. Sure enough, there's some quite a number of people who are actually members of the church that never come. And our plan, we haven't actually we're in the process right now of fixing up a parsonage. It's about 45 miles north of where we actually live in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And so we'll live part-time up there and part-time here. But our main reason for fixing up that parsonage is we're going to have some parties on a Friday night. And I plan to make some one-minute visits to all of these members who are not attending, just introduce myself, give a card to them, and say, if you ever have a spiritual need, you let me know. And then plan to have some events from time to time. And then on Friday nights, we plan to have some people over and have relatives of some of our people that attend actively and members that are not active and whatever prospects we can come up with. And it's a little bit of a slow process. I don't expect it to happen overnight, but I think I've seen it happen many times where you get them to the party and you would not be able to keep them from class. So anyway, that's invite every member and every prospect to every fellowship every month. That will tend to be a big event, a kind of all-skate event, as I like to say it, because it's invite every member and every prospect. But the nice thing about that event is it ensures that we systematically, consistently see that everybody gets, every member and every prospect gets a contact once a month. And the contact is a real friendly one. If you call people once a month and say, you haven't been to Sunday school, we noticed you haven't attended. We sure would like for you to come to Sunday school. Come back. You still haven't come to Sunday school. We sure would like for you to come to Sunday school. Call back next month. I notice you still haven't come to Sunday school. Before long, you will start to represent to them something that is actually antithetical to the message of the gospel itself, and that is a message of grace and acceptance, because you will tend to represent for them guilt and condemnation, and you're a bad person, and you haven't come, and so on. And it gets awkward for them, it gets awkward for you, and so we quit doing it. And so in contrast to that, I like to say, slightly tongue-in-cheek, if you want to double a class every 2 years or less, don't invite people to class. Instead, invite them to the party. Have a party once a month. Have some kind of event that that sounds fun, and call them up and invite them and say, we sure would like to have you come to this event. And I've seen it happen again more times than I could count. If we can get them to the event, we could not keep them from class. So we want to teach a halfway decent lesson each and every week. Nothing less will do. And then the core strategy is around these monthly parties. I did a survey, by the way, or in the process of working on a new book called What Makes Groups Grow, and surveyed 1,000 Sunday school teachers and found that Sunday school teachers who are in the high fellowship group, I call it, have 9 or more fellowships a year, are in rough numbers twice as likely to be doubling than Sunday school classes that are in the low fellowship group, that is, that are having 1 fellowship a quarter or less. And so we've been able to kind of document the fact that you really can grow a class through parties and through fellowships and that kind of event. So T, teach a halfway decent lesson each and every week, nothing less will do. I, invite every member and every prospect to every fellowship every month. G stands for Give Friday Nights for Jesus to Jesus. It is a bit of a metaphor, and it is kind of a subset of the invite every member and every prospect to every fellowship every month. But inviting every member and every prospect to every fellowship every month is going to be a bit of a big event. Say it's an all skate, invite every member, every prospect, and you'll have a bit of a crowd if all goes well. Giving Friday nights to Jesus is a smaller event. It's me and my wife having some friends over. The reason I got this job, you might say, humanly speaking, is my father-in-law was on the pulpit committee. And so they're very active members. He is the Sunday school teacher of the one and only class, one and only adult class. We have one adult class and youth class and one children's class, no preschoolers. But at any rate, we might have them over and then have, you know, one of these members that have not come in a long time, and just whatever we kind of feel like doing. And I've heard a number of stories like this over the years. One pastor up in, I think it was Ohio, he said, in his case, there's an Italian food place down the street. And he said, I have never yet gotten a family to visit the church and then got them to that Italian food place and them not join the church. He said, every single one of them has. And, again, it's a smaller, informal kind of event. I call it giving Friday nights for Jesus because, in my case, it actually was Friday night. And so I when I first started thinking about this, that's the way I thought about it, that it would be a literal kind of a Friday night event. And the more I thought about it, and after I got the book published, I realized it doesn't actually have to be a Friday night. It's an informal event, doing whatever it is that you like to do, and we constantly just invite people to that. So T, teach a halfway decent lesson each and every week. Nothing less will do. I, invite every member and every prospect to our fellowship every month. G is give Friday nights to Jesus. Doesn't have to be Friday night, but it could be. E is encourage the group toward ministry. That is, we want to get everybody in the group involved in ministry in some way. And so the idea is we would have in-reach leaders who would invite every member, outreach leaders who would invite every prospect. When I do seminars, I try to get as many people, the churches try to invite the churches to invite as many people as they can, because what I found is that oftentimes Sunday school teachers are not into this kind of thing. Bluntly, Sunday school teachers are not the funnest people in the room. They tend to be a little bit bookish, kind of serious-minded, kind of studious kind of people. Their idea of a good time is hanging out at Barnes & Noble. And so what we want to do is put alongside those Sunday school teachers some party-loving, and my experience is usually women, some party-loving women and some people who will invite every member, and those will be kind of motherly, caring people oftentimes, and then people who will invite every prospect, and those will tend to be a little more aggressive, don't mind, calling people they don't know and that kind of thing, extroverted kind of folks. So we want in-reach leaders, outreach leaders, fellowship leaders. If we can get in every class a person I call the class leader who will organize the group and get everybody doing what they need to do, all the better. But we want to encourage the whole group toward ministry. And the idea is ultimately not so much that we want to we have these slots, that we have an in-reach leader slot and an outreach leader slot and a class leader slot and so on. The point is we want to get everybody involved. We want to get every active member involved in ministry in some way, either working in the children's area, preschool area, there being an in-reach leader. And those, you could have multiple in-reach leaders and just divide up the class role and each one make six or eight, ten phone calls. But we want to encourage every single person to be involved in ministry. And the last thing we want to do is ultimately we want to reproduce our group. That is, doubling a class every 2 years or less is not so much about going from one class, excuse me, from going from 10 to 20 as much as it's about going from one class to two classes. And the reason for that is we want to create an environment in Sunday school where when people miss, they are missed. Somebody notices. And if it's a class of 10 or maybe 20 and somebody misses, I will miss them. But if it's a class of 30 or 40, I probably won't. And so the iron law of Sunday school suggests there is a 1 to 10 ratio between the number of groups and overall attendance. This would be our plan at Salem, where I just took on this pastorate. It's, you know, I've said somewhat facetiously but somewhat seriously, you know, if my wife and I can each start a class and get 10 people in that in each of our classes, we will double the Sunday school just by the two of us getting the class started. And so it illustrates the idea that we grow a Sunday school. And these ideas go back to Flake and any early Sunday school pioneer you want a name. We grow a Sunday school not by doubling the size of each group. We grow a Sunday school by doubling the number of groups. So T-I-G-E-R, teach a halfway decent lesson each and every week, nothing less will do. Invite every member and every prospect to every fellowship every month. Give Friday nights to Jesus. Doesn't have to be Friday night, and it doesn't have to be every week, but as time allows, we get an informal time of Diet Coke, coffee cake, table games, doing whatever it is that you like to do. We want to encourage the whole group to be involved in this process, planning parties and inviting people and so on. And then ultimately, we want to reproduce our group. So that's our five-step strategy.
Okay, that's great. And I appreciate you repeating those several times for us to make sure we got it down, because I was going to ask you to do that, because that's very helpful. And it's good for me, at least, to be able to have that picture, that formula in my head as we move forward. Now, we've got a little less than probably 12 or 13 minutes to handle our last three questions. So let's hit them fast, and if we have some other questions in our Q&A, we'll come back to them. But let's look at our third question. What is the secret of the doubling process? I believe you've alluded to that, but hit on it again for us.
Yeah, hang on a second.
I'm on an important phone call. If y'all can stay quiet, please.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, teenagers in the room, you know.
Well, it's a live call. That's the way it goes.
There we go. Well, as I say, the key is this hospitality-based ministry. I just want to kind of give you a couple of verses, because I assume I'm assuming we have pastors in the room, and so I'll give you a couple of verses you might use to preach on these. One is, let me get my notes in front of me here so I can quote it right. Romans 12:13 from the Living says, get into the habit of inviting guests home for dinner. And you'll notice that the way this is worded and is it's an imperative verb. That is, we're commanded to get into the habit of inviting guests home for dinner. It's really not optional. Somebody came to me after a conference not too many months back and said, you know, what you're talking about is really not a Sunday school program as much as you're just talking about how the Bible says to live the Christian life. And indeed, the Bible just commands us. It's just the way the Christian life is to be lived. We're to live with the habit of getting of inviting guests home for dinner. Kenneth Taylor, in a way, has taken some liberty with the text. He's trying to communicate that present tense linear verb of the Greek, where it suggests that we do this as an ongoing action. It's not a one-time event, but as a lifestyle, we get into the habit of inviting guests home for dinner. Another key verse I often quote is 1 Peter 4:9. This is from the NIV. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. And again, it's a command. We're commanded to live this way. We're commanded to offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Notice the command is to offer. I fully expect that when we get into this house up in Salem and we start calling people, members who have not been to church in years perhaps, and we invite them to our home and say we'd like to invite you to come over to watch a movie or play cards or have some pizza or enchiladas or whatever, I fully expect most of them will turn us down. But the text says get into the habit, and the habit is inviting, offering hospitality to one another without grumbling. And those last two words are tell me that Peter probably did some of this himself, because sometimes, you know, it can be work, and I teach a party-driven plan and a fun plan, but it's not a plan that does not involve some work. And you know, sometimes people will turn you down. Sometimes, you know, sometimes we want to win our world for God, but what we really mean is we want to reach fun people, interesting people, and funny people, and so on. And God has called us to reach all kinds of people. And you throw out the net, you're going to get all kinds of fish. And some of them are not that fun, and they're not that interesting. And so the text says, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. It's probably not true of every woman in the world, but I can tell you when my wife and I have people over, she likes to have the house clean. And living room clean, kitchen clean, dining room clean, the whole place clean, and all good ideas degenerate into work. And that's why I think the Bible says, offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Two other verses real quick. 3 John, verse 8. We ought therefore, and I think this is not actually an imperative verb so much as it's a statement of fact, but we ought to. This is something we ought to do. This is the way the Christian life is lived. We ought to show hospitality to such men so that we may work together. And when I speak on that, I draw attention to those words, work together, to point out this encourage the group toward ministry kind of concept, that we want to get a whole team of people involved in this. And then arguably the key verse of all is Luke 14:12, because to some degree I think we're doing that. We're, you know, I'm Baptist. I don't know if all of y'all are Baptist, but anyway, we're pretty big on the potluck dinner, you know, and we do quite a bit of that. The thing that we're not doing, I think, oftentimes is communicated in Luke 14:12. Where, as God's Word translation has it, Jesus told the man who had invited him, when you invite people to lunch or dinner, do not invite only your friends. And actually, if you look it up in a more straightforward translation, the NIV, he says, Jesus said to his host, when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends. And the sense of it is, do not invite your friends at all. Now, I think the spirit of those words have been captured by the God's Word paraphrase, where he says, do not invite only your friends. And how many times have we had a luncheon or dinner and we invited only our friends? And I come back and say it again. I believe that this plan is not so much a Sunday school plan as much as it is understanding how the Christian life is to be lived, that it is to be lived in one another's homes, around dinner tables. And when we do these dinners and luncheons and so on, we form a habit, and that habit is inviting guests, and the guests are not just our friends. We get in the habit of inviting outsiders, prospects, absentees, people who are members of the church, haven't been here a long time, friends, neighbors of our members, and so on. But at any rate, we just get in the habit of inviting them. And in my experience, that's kind of the missing element, that we, in some cases, are having some parties, although most cases not doing so as regularly or systematically and consistently as we should.
Josh, the secret, just in a nutshell, the secret of the doubling process is really you need a party planner in your group.
That's right.
I mean, it doesn't have to
right.
be formally, but that's kind of what you're saying, isn't it? That it's that
exactly.
fellowship, it's that relationship building, it's that interaction, it's that informal kind of a setting with the interacting. Doesn't matter if it's board games or it's video games or it's just food around the table or other things, but it's an intentional process of nine or more, from what you said with that statistic earlier, nine or more fellowship-type activities that you're inviting both your church people but also those prospects to on a regular basis.
Exactly.
Excellent. Okay, let's move on to our last two questions, and again, we can come back and unpack some of this a little bit more in a few minutes, but let's look at encouraging people. How do we encourage people to implement these ideas?
I am a big believer in leading by example, and this is probably the number one question that I get. I don't know how many times I've been asked this question over the years. A minister of education or a pastor will come up to me often after a conference, and he'll hear my spiel, and we'll talk for 2.5 or sometimes 5 hours on some of the things we've been highlighting today, and he'll say, Josh, I know these ideas work. I've seen them work. I believe in what you're saying. How can I get my people to do this? And my response is always the same. How are you doing? What are you doing? When's the last time you had some guests' feet underneath your dining room table? Now, I am humble enough to understand this is not the only way to grow a church. You can grow a church without doing parties. There's a gazillion good ways to grow a church. But if you're going to grow a church using parties, you have to lead by example. Bill Hybel says it, the pastor must embody the vision. I'm pretty much crummy at stereotypical lifestyle evangelism, as Bill Hybel often talks about, and is gifted that way. And he can grow a church the way he can grow a church because he's gifted the way he's gifted, and he can do that. If you want this to work, there has to be some way, somebody, and it's best, I think, if it's a senior pastor, otherwise maybe a minister of education, but there's got to be somebody in the church who says, though none go with me, still I will follow. And I am going to do this, and I'm going to live this way because I love living this way, whether or not anybody else goes. And I had a guy come up to me one time and said, man, I read your book, love your book, love that book, Double Your Class, love that concept of giving Friday nights to Jesus. And I just smiled and said, how's it going? And he said, oh, well, I don't do it. I just think it's a great idea. Well, it wasn't working very well in his context. And if it's going to work, somebody's got to say, you know what, we like doing parties. We actually like living this way. And Andy Stanley has a phrase I love. He says, we would do it anyway. Whether or not anybody follows, whether or not it's a good strategy, we would do it anyway. Because we just like, this is a fun way to spend a Friday night, from my opinion. And so the key thing in encouraging people to do this is leading by example. The second thing I would mention is, and that is the principle of reward. The Bible has a lot to say about reward. And I think the idea that we catch somebody doing something right. Kenneth Blanchard, in his old book, One Minute Manager, talked about the fact that there's a tendency in management to spend 80% of our time, telling people what they ought to do, and 20% of our time catching them doing something right. And he says, Kenneth Blanchard said, we ought to go at it the other way. We ought to spend about 80% of our time catching people doing something right, and then only about 20% of our time being prescriptive, saying, now, maybe we should do this, we should do that. And so if we get any inclination that somebody is moving in the right direction, we try to stand on the stage and say, you know, we're going to just give you a good example of this. We're having an event at our small church next Friday night. We're going to show the Fireproof movie. We bought the kit and got the license and got some posters and so on, and we were up at the church parsonage painting last night. There was a guy there that told me he passed out about 10 posters, or not passed out, but put them in various stores and stuff. And you know what I need to do on Sunday? I need to stand up on Sunday and I will say, let me tell you what Wayne did. He did a good job, and I appreciate that. Maybe there's some other people who would like to pass out a few more posters, or some places where we hadn't had them put them up yet. But we catch people doing something right, and try to kind of reward them by recognition. So lead by example, live it. And by the way, I would also say in passing that if you look at the qualifications for a pastor, as I read it, one of those is that a pastor is given hospitality. And from my perspective, this is simply in the job description of a pastor. And just by the way, I'd also say in passing, I don't think it necessarily have to be in a home. I think you could get away with it. I'll tell you a story a moment ago about a pastor that they talked to, is out in the country somewhere. There's only a little bitty town. I think there was one restaurant in town, happened to be an Italian food restaurant. But their expression of this party-based deal, maybe, I'm guessing, maybe they didn't like having people in their home. But the way they went out it is they went to a restaurant. But one way or another, somebody has to lead by example. And then the second thing is to try to reward the people who are showing some progress in this area.
Josh, we've got one more question, and we are running out of time. We've just got about 4 minutes for it. But I want us to note and maybe come back and dialogue this during our Q&A time. I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of this relative to context. As far as having the parties at the church building, having the parties in the home, having the parties in a neutral setting. I know in our context in Michigan, just the nature of Northerners, oftentimes people aren't quite as receptive just to going to a home, especially somebody who there's not a real good close relationship with, is not as close to, and having something occasionally in a neutral location may be helpful for kind of bridging that gap. But let's come back to that in a minute. I just want to make a mental note because I think that's a valuable thing to dialogue about. These parties that you're talking about. Let's hit our last question, then we come back and see what other questions folks on the line have in our conference room. Let's talk about question number five. What strategies overcome objections to creating new groups? This is a huge deal for most pastors and church leaders.
Well, I would say it's only a huge deal if the church is growing. In other words, I would definitely work on that point last and get the classes growing before we work on dividing. But the best way to do the dividing to me is a kind of dabble and experiment, I want to call it, rather than leadership by pronouncement. Leadership by pronouncement, what I mean by that is a few smart people, spiritual people, get in, you know, what we sometimes call the smoke-filled rooms, and we decide, you know, God's will for the group, and so we come and we make a pronouncement, hear ye, 2 weeks from now, we're going to divide this group, all you people are going to go this way, all you people, and adults will always resist that idea. And instead of that, you know, you could walk in one day and say, boy, we got a great crowd, look at this. You know, a year ago we had 5, now we had 25. We got a really good discussion that's going to lend itself to discussion groups. I've written up some questions here. I was wondering if we could divide up in 5 groups of 5 and talk about these. And the next week all the men get together and all the women get together. And over time, you kind of percolate up some subdivisions. And we try to take advantage of those as best we can. The key issue is always going to be leadership. It's a little bit humorous thing to me because I'm in a lot of associations where there's a lot of small churches involved, and then occasionally in, you know, I've been in First Baptist Church Atlanta, for example, and a few churches like that. And no matter what church you go to, the problem is always the same. And if you think about it, Jesus told us what the problem was going to be. Jesus said, the harvest is plentiful, the workers are few. Jesus taught us that the bottleneck of the disciple-making evangelistic process is always going to be workers. And you know what a small church will say to me? You know what the problem is around here? I mean, my church, we have 30 in worship, 20 in Sunday school. And the problem is we've got the same people doing everything, and they're tired. And we just don't got anybody else to help. And we need more workers. And you go to First Baptist Church Atlanta and a Sunday school of 3,000 or so, and Minister of Education there will tell me, you know what the problem is around here? You have any idea how much trouble it is to recruit the number of workers? Do you have any idea how many workers you have to fully staff a Sunday school of 3,000? And it's true everywhere. And if that new class ultimately is going to work, it's going to work because we have a leader. And, you know, we would encourage every Sunday school teacher to have a leader in training to let those people teach regularly and hopefully let people kind of fall in love with that substitute teacher. And hopefully somewhere along the line, there'll be some kind of gravitational pull around this new leader. And as we kind of dabble and experiment with new groups, an idea percolates out of that that makes it possible to create a new group.
Okay, let's do this, Josh. Let's go ahead and transition into our question and answer time and open lines up. That way others in our room, our conference room, can ask some questions. Let me do this. All participants, I need to ask you, if you will, to please self-mute your telephone. You can do that on the conference bridge simply by pressing 4-star. That will unmute your phone so you can ask a question or make a comment. You'll need to do that. Press 4-star again. Now, if you have the ability on your phone to mute it right there, that's fine as well. But I'm going to unmute all of our phones at this time, and so you'll need to go ahead and mute your phone so that the sound of your room might come. Okay, finally, do us all a favor when you ask a question or give us your name, or we want you to give us your name and where you serve before asking your question or making your comment. If there's much of a lull, then I'll jump back in and we'll continue our questions and discussion with Josh. So let's do that. Anyone have a question they would like to ask, give us your name and then ask the first question, please. All right, anybody at all? Somebody's going to have to jump right in. Yeah, I hear somebody clicking, trying to either mute or unmute. Do we have somebody there? All right, Josh, let me continue with this line of thought we kind of jumped into a few minutes ago, because I would like to unpack it a little bit, and somebody else may have a question, and if they do, we'll unmute the phones here again just a second. But let's dialogue a little bit about the location of your parties and what you're talking about as far as these fellowship groups. In the context in which we are here in Michigan, you know, having things in homes is a great deal if you've got good close friends, but people are a little bit more hesitant to do that kind of a thing until they really get to know somebody. They don't just typically go to homes. Is it a good idea in your experience to be able to mix some of those fellowship opportunities between inviting people to the home, inviting people possibly to the church building for some kind of a fellowship, inviting them to a neutral place like a community center or a place there in the town or area where everybody gathers together, maybe even you know, some family gatherings of some sort where you'd gather a small group into a smaller area? What has been your experience with that?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in the word both and all. And, you know, there's a tendency, I'm going to digress for just a little bit here, a lot of people experimenting these days with home groups. And there'll be a tendency for some people to say, in fact, curiously, I've heard people make the same statement with different conclusions. They'll say, well, you know, outsiders, they're more likely, it's more friendly, and they're more likely to come to a home than to come to a church building. And I've heard other people say the exact opposite thing about outsiders. You know, well, those outsiders, you know, it's more comfortable to come to a kind of public place like a church building than to, you know, come to a real overly intimate place like somebody's home. And at the end of the day, both statements are true depending on what person you're talking about. And depending on what kind of person you're talking about, an event in a restaurant, an event at the church, an event at some other public place, these could be all kinds of events. And so oftentimes people come up to me and ask me, you know, what kind of events should our group do? And my response always is, what are you already doing? What do you like doing? Because this needs to have a we would do it anyway kind of feel to it. We love having people in our home, but if you don't, you know, that's probably not going to work for you very well. So go to a movie, go to a restaurant, do whatever it is you like to do. But the more variety, the better. One of the things I do in my seminar, I show this video from Willow Creek where they talk about this kind of party-driven strategy, and I mean, it's a dramatization of it. And they're trying to get this one guy to come, and they, you know, they mention music concert, and he's no way, and this event and that way, and then it's a vintage car show, and you know, his eyes perk up, and different things are going to attract different people, and so as much variety as possible, the more variety, the better, and it needs to have, as I say, a kind of we would do this anyway kind of feel that it has to fit for you.
Yeah, I would agree, because I can see in some situations, even within our context, where the home works very well, but at other times you need to do both. So I think a both and probably is the best approach, and probably so in most contexts. Real quick before we open the lines up again, see if we do have some questions. You mentioned earlier about 9 fellowships a year, and you say you've done a good bit of research on that. Elaborate just a little bit. Were you able to discover any solid, measurable kind of data as to why the 9 ended up being the number? Why was that a breaking point?
Well, just 9 or more. You know, I teach invite every member and every prospect to our fellowship every month. So,
right.
You know, what I'm encouraging groups to do is to have 12 a year, one a month. But the ones who are hit that threshold of, you know, that's just the way I ask the question. Give them 3 choices, 0 to 4, 5 to 8, or 9 or above fellowships. And one other insight on that, by the way, I also ask about how many people they had involved. And in rough numbers, I can give the detail of this in the seminar, and it's going to be in the book, but in rough numbers, groups that have what I call a low team, that is a teacher is working all by themselves, or they have one other person that are helping, contrasted with groups that have 4 or more people. That is, they have an inreach leader, outreach leader, fellowship leader. I didn't actually ask what the leaders were, but they have 4 people helping them doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Those groups are also, the high team groups are twice as likely to be doubling in rough numbers in compared to the low team. If you layer those things on top of each other, groups that have lots of parties and have a large team are 3.5 times more likely to be doubling than groups that do not have parties and groups that do not have a large team helping. So the data is really coming in that these things work.
That's excellent. Anybody on the line now that would have an additional question? If you have a question, make sure and unmute your telephone. by pressing 4-star or on your telephone. Then if you will give us your name and where you serve. Anyone have a question?
Yeah, Brian. I'm a minister for Church of God of Cleveland, Tennessee in Crestline, Ohio.
Right, Brian. Yeah, if you'll speak up real loud so we can hear you good.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, go right ahead. Ask Josh your question.
All right. Josh, my question for you would be, how would you see a way of adopting the tactics that you're using for doubling your group study to be used in a personal evangelism way? Say I was to go to an apartment building or a complex. And how would you adapt that to maybe using those same strategies for personal evangelism?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I have a good answer to that question. Our approach was, and I say there's a gazillion ways of growing a church, but our approach was we did, and I'm talking now because I'm 2 months into this new pastorate, so I'm kind of depending on old experience now. But the approach was that we would use kind of tractional events to get visitors to come. And in our case, we had quite a few visitors, and I've done a little bit of research on that. Actually, most churches have plenty of visitors. The challenge is getting those visitors to stick around. And so then they would come to the worship service, we would get them to our home, and I baptized many people, saw many people come to faith in Christ, and the other people just assimilated so it's not really a classic personal evangelism strategy as much as it is a strategy for the person who doesn't feel comfortable with going into an apartment and knocking on doors.
Okay, very good. Question there? Yeah, Brian.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, did you have a follow-up question?
No, that was all I had. Thank you so much.
Very good. Excellent. All right. Someone else have a question for Josh?
Yes, Bob. I do.
Yeah, go ahead and give your name and tell us where you're calling from.
Rodney Agin, North Point Baptist, right outside of Atlanta. Not Andy Stanley's. We're not quite that big.
That's good. All right. If you'll ask Josh your question.
All right. We have about 500 on worship. Probably on a normal Sunday, there is 75 to 100 adults that are not connected yet. And I'm just looking for maybe a more personal way to figure out how to get these fellowship leaders, teachers, to maybe start with this crowd and connect. So that's kind of my question. What would you suggest?
So the question of actually getting their names and phone numbers, that kind of thing?
Well, yeah, a lot of them are loose. Some of them have connected as far as filling out something, but a lot of them have not. And I'm just trying to come up with a way maybe to highlight this and start with that warm crowd that's already there and then work, of course, out.
Right. Well, I think it's a great idea. I mean, I think there's something to be said for going after what I call the most reachable people in town, which are the people who are visiting your worship service. But, I believe Jesus told us to go make disciples. He didn't tell us just to get people to show up occasionally to a worship service, but to actually, make disciples out of them, but move them to that next step. But at any rate, obviously one challenge in a lot of churches is actually just getting names and email addresses and phone numbers. And my answer to that might be a little bit counterintuitive, but hear me out. I think you can work too hard at that. In other words, if people flat do not want to give you their name and phone number, I don't think you're going to serve anybody by forcing them to do something. You're just going to make them mad. I want to mention a kind of friendly way of going at it here in a minute, but I'd go at it in kind of a friendly way, and if people are not ready to take the next step, I wouldn't push them too hard. One thing that I've seen a lot of churches do with success from time to time is have everybody register. I think when I went to Saddleback years ago, they thought then that they did that every week, I assume they still do, where every single week, every single person fills up.
Josh, you're breaking up real bad.
Oh, yeah. At Saddleback, they have everybody fill out a form every week. I'm not sure to do it every week, on a regular basis to ask everybody to, if they're willing, to fill out, some information. And I think it's better to tell them what you're going to do with information. If you're going to visit, tell them you're going to visit. If you're not going to visit, tell them you're not going to visit. Systematically, consistently. And one of the things I found is this is not an overnight success, flash in the pan kind of approach. I remember sometimes invite people 10, 12, 14 times before they would ever come to an event the first time. And one of the nice things about this approach is because you're inviting them to a different event every time, there's like information, it's news, and it's friendly. You know, hey, we're going to go bowling. We're going to go putt-putt. We're going to go to Red Lobster. We're going to do this. We're going to sure would like to have you come. And some people, it would say 10 times before they respond. But you just keep and keep encouraging, and eventually they come around.
Thank you.
Yeah, for some reason it's breaking up. Rodney, could you hear his response okay?
Yes, I caught enough of that. That's a great idea.
Okay, yeah,
thank you.
It's kind of spattering out. I apologize for
yeah.
that. I'm not sure if that's the conference bridge or one of our phones doing that. All right, do we have any other questions before we let Josh go? Anyone else? Give us your name and where you're calling from.
This is Benji Potter from Mulberry Grove, Illinois.
All right, Benji, go right ahead and ask Josh your question.
When you're dealing with leadership and trying to find the leaders, one of the things that crosses my mind is we're trying to reach some younger families with children. What do you do about you've got to find leadership also for the younger children, that those classes should be expanding as your adult classes are expanding as well? How do you go about finding and training those leaders?
I think the best way is, of course, so we just start by the awareness that this is always going to be a problem. This is why we have a job, because as Jesus said, harvest is plentiful, the worker, it's always going to be the challenge of getting workers. Some churches, I think, need to simplify their programming. They're doing kindergarten to senior adult programming three times a week, and they've created kind of a monster for themselves. Now, that's not true everywhere, but that is a problem in some cases. And so the solution is not to come up with more workers. The solution is to come up with less demand. The best way, in my opinion, of coming up with workers is allowing them to dabble in an experiment. And Bill Hyde will talk about this way, that you get every worker you have to try to be a recruiter and get them to say, would you come with me one time down to this preschool class and just sit with me and watch. And when you're all done, they go out to lunch and say, how did you experience that? Is it something that you may consider yourself doing sometime in the future? I think I teach kids, but maybe older kids. Okay, well, now that we kind of move them toward a place where they could serve. But we try to kind of let people put their toe in the water and their ankle in the water and their foot in the water and dabble and experiment. So that's my best answer.
Very good. Thank you, Josh. Josh, it sounds like your line's breaking up there. I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and kind of wrap up because we're having a hard time hearing your signal at all there. But we do want to close by thanking you, Josh, for your time and sharing your expertise. We surely haven't answered all of our questions about doubling our group sizes, but I do hope that today that our conference has been able to help us get to thinking in the right direction and has given us some tools to help put us on the right track to helping our churches grow by impacting the lives of lost people in our communities by doubling our group size. For our audio conference ministry, I'm Bobby Gilstrap. We want to thank you for joining us today, and join us again in the fall when we resume our conference ministry in September and October. Thank you again for joining us, and special thanks to Josh.
Pleasure to be here.